WIOX is supported by you and the following underwriters. The Catskill Mountain Foundation, celebrating decades of arts on the mountaintop with countless performances, classes, and community events each year, from Grammy Award-winning music to dance and art classes for all ages, including classical music, April in Paris, a romantic conversation, and musical stroll through the City of Lights with musicologist Dr. Jeffrey Lanford and pianist Dr. Joanne Polk, Saturday, April 13th at 2 p.m. More information at CatskillMTN.org. Nainu, the shop of Mother Earth, a Peruvian boutique for clothing and hats, blankets and bags, rugs, pillows and decorative pieces using sustainable organic materials. Nainu, the shop of Mother Earth, Main Street in Margaretville, New York, 917-701-2496, 917-701-2496. Rick's Tire Service, family-owned and operated on State Route 30 between Roxbury and Grand Gorge. Tires, mounting, and wheel balancing for cars, trucks, lawn, garden, farm, and construction vehicles. Open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, Saturday, 8 till noon. More information at 800-LG-TIRES, 800-LG-TIRES. This is WIOX Roxbury, your live and local soundtrack for winter in the Catskills. As you cruise through local towns and villages like Delhi, Davenport, Stamford, Hobart, for rare books, bright lights, meditative days, and karaoke nights. Find links to winter happenings in the Catskills at WIOXradio.org.
Okay, you are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local, in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, 107.5 FM on the campus of SUNY Delhi and everywhere at WIOXradio.org on computers or smartphones. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and Zane. Zane, how's it going?
Good. Very good.
What have you been up to?
Well, I've been watching some growth coming in. Old Man Winter's back now, though he hasn't left. But I've been seeing some spring beauties come up. They haven't flowered yet. Some crocuses. The grass is starting to grow. Seeing a little bit of leaves coming out and some honeysuckle today. But, yeah, it's all blanketed in snow now.
Yeah. Well, getting a little cold here the next couple of days, and I think it'll be back a little warmer. But yeah, it's been busy restocking what I burned throughout the winter, which was not much. It's a pretty mild winter. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, maybe two cords. I don't know. Not much. You know, it's I have to cut back on firewood a little bit because in the last two winters, I'm like stocking up a little bit too much, you know? It's starting to get into four-year-old wood. I don't need that. So it can only be so old, you know? If it was stacked like inside a barn, it would be fine, but it's not perfect. But
yeah, I just started burning some wood that I split two Septembers ago. So it's not fully seasoned yet, but it is burning pretty good now. Hopefully that'll carry me through till April, May, and so.
And maple sugaring season's over. I think we said that last time. It was an average season, I think, for most people. If you tapped in January, if you held off till late February, probably not so great. You know, but you know, it's generally speaking, it depends where you are, how high up you're tapping, what side of the mountain, all that. But generally speaking, that seems to be the consensus from the few maple producers I've spoken to.
Yeah, the second weekend maple weekend is this weekend. So
yeah,
visit maple producers around the area. I know I plan on to. So
right.
Yeah.
So every third Wednesday we talk to Gary Mead, talk about a different Catskills tree. But tonight's topic is state trees of the USA, part two. I mean,
part
we
two.
Got to Colorado, right?
Yeah, we got to Colorado last week. So. We're going to try to, you know, speed it along a little bit and get a few more trees per month and roll along. But anyway, it's good that we got, what's that noise? It's good that we got this cold snap. We don't need trees flowering and budding yet. It's just too early. Mm. And, you know, we did have a mild winter, and I was glad that we had this little bit of this week of cold because it's more normal, and that's what we needed. We need to put a stop to cold flowers were coming up last week, and you know they're a couple of weeks early. We don't need stuff flowering quite yet because of the. You know, especially the apple trees. Been 2 years in a row we haven't had good apple crop because of this weird weather and then a late freeze. But hopefully this year, you know, I will have to, you know, go out of town somewhere to get apples to have pressed to make my juice and cider and apple cider vinegar. And but
we'll see.
We'll see. Yeah, that's what we will. But, you know, Colorado Bruce is the first one on the list this week. And, we have blue spruce here. And, you know, when I was running the mill, we had a lot of, I wouldn't say 100 phone calls, but at least 30 or 40 phone calls or, you know, people plant them along their driveway, and after, you know, 25, 30, 35 years, they die from the bottom up, and they want to sell them to me to make lumber, but I never sawed too much of it. I dried some for a local guy that made a countertop out of it or an island or something, and actually it's pretty nice-looking wood.
Yeah.
It's very... very flowing grain and, you know, really nice tight red knots and, you know, but that, you know, I kiln dried it and, you know, somebody installed it for him. He showed me pictures of it. It was really quite nice, but I saw it a couple, you know, when Mitch gets tree jobs and stuff in the local area, he'll drop the logs off as long as but I always made them into framing and, you know, sheathing. You know, I never thought to make anything interior out of it, but you know, that one countertop or island that you know, this guy put, you know, he had a blue spruce that died on his lawn, he had it cut down and sawed and brought it to the mill to get dried and made it, you know, an island in his home, and it come out pretty nice. That was the only blue spruce interior project I ever got involved with, but you know, they only have a 30 to 40-year lifespan. And
so that's what you said you found in Colorado? They lived only that long?
Yeah, that's because I researched this week. Wow. I was very surprised to see that they don't live in Colorado any longer than they do here. But
Yeah, around here, they'll live longer than that, but it's just around 25 years plus or minus they start getting, you know, fungal issues from the bottom up. So I wouldn't recommend planting them unless it's for a Christmas tree. End up wanting to cut less than 10 years.
Yeah, they lose their needles. They end up looking like a big pipe cleaner on the landscape.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But, you know, they're what they're noted for in Colorado is, you know, mammals and birds, they do a lot of nesting and they, you know, they feed off the seeds and stuff, and it's a good habitat for them.
Yeah. So, okay, that's Colorado. Let's move it on. What's next after Colorado?
Well, we got Connecticut. Huh? Now, white oak is a favored tree.
This, I believe, that should be their state tree, I think.
Right.
Yeah, it's beautiful oak trees out there.
Yeah, and well, there's a few states that have different oaks, bur oak and spar oak and spur oak or whatever. But you know, there's two that have white oak, but Connecticut's one of them. And white oak is actually right now it's one of the most favored woods because they're exporting a lot of it, which is driving the price way up. And it's kind of been over-harvested through the years, so it's not been, you know, well kept for the future. So because of the shortage of it and exporting it, the price is out of sight now. It's about the same as black walnut.
We had the White Oak Initiative on recently.
Yep.
And, yeah, just like you said, they're exporting to China, but also between that and the distillery market for whiskey barrels. And, yeah, a shortage of them through the roof prices.
Yeah, I went to a stave mill down in Kentucky years ago, and I went to visit my nephew and my sister in Indiana and Kentucky, and they brought me to a stave mill, and that was an amazing process.
Yeah.
I mean, the logs come in and, you know, anywhere from 8 to 20-foot lengths, and they get put up on this deck and, you know, out, like, where the logs come into the mill, they cut them into 3, 4, and 5-foot sections, depending on the grade of the log. And I guess the staves, which is the sides of the barrel, they take the more toward the butt of the log because it's all quarter sawn. And it comes into the mill, and, you know, there were like 25, 30 people in the mill. And, you know, it was probably 100 by 200 on the inside of this mill. And, you know, these logs are outside of like these automated chainsaws, cut them into lengths, and, you know, they have a little computer that grades them, and it gets kicked to one line or the other, and it goes in. They're all little band mills that saw them up, but they quarter saw everything. And so some of the bigger, you know, I was walking through the mill, because they gave us a tour. I'm walking through the mill, and I saw some, you know, reddish, pinkish, you know, oak. And when I got out in the office, I had asked the guy, I said, geez, I thought they only use white oak in the process. And he said, well, because I said, what I saw looked like red oak out there. And he said, that's the best white oak there is. As he said, any trees that are 60 years and older, heart starts to turn pinkish color.
Yeah.
And I never knew that before because, you know, I was buying out of Hofer Lumber and Calico, and I was buying, you know, white oak from them, and I go through the pack and I pull all the pinkish stuff out and sell it as red oak, and it was really white oak, you know.
Oh, crap.
Well, that was back when red and white oak, they were probably, you know, 30, 40 years ago, they were, you know, weren't that much difference in price.
Yeah.
But anyway, I didn't realize until I made that. Well, that was 10 years ago, I think, I went down there, that I realized that, geez, you know, when, you know, Hofer sends me white oak, it's all white oak. I mean, he's not one to screw around, but.
You know, people like to talk trash about Connecticut, but I got to drive through there because I take Arbormaster training for arborists last few years. And I'll take back roads just because whatever.
Yeah.
And I went through one place, maybe Ridgefield or something like that. There's some of the most beautiful, pruned, old, tall sugar maple trees I've ever seen.
Right.
Some of the most beautiful oak trees. That place is I would say, definitely one of the best places to be an arborist, you know, in the eastern United States. Yep. For a showcase of, like, just beautiful big old trees.
Well, every time I've driven through there, there's, you know, not a lot of, you know, the woods doesn't look, I mean, they take dead stuff out of their forests.
Well, I'm talking about near the towns where they've right. kept them, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, not in the forest setting.
Well, when you're driving along and see a forest scene, it's you know, pretty cleaned up as, you know, everything I ever saw.
Yeah.
You know, like in New York, you go to different places, especially on city and state land. I mean, stuff is crisscross and you know, it's just, it looks kind of like a mess, but, you know, it's, but in Connecticut, well, I'm not in Connecticut as much as I'm in New York either, so, you know, I can't yeah. really make a judgment call on that, but everywhere I ever went, and you're right, in near the populated towns where they actually, you know, keep these trees and, you know, they keep them like their houses. They keep the lawn, you know. It's like,
yeah, they really invest in them.
Cleaned up, yeah.
One last thing on Connecticut, the best wild Concord grapes anywhere around I've ever had. They grow like a weed, like in many places. We have them.
We have them.
Not near, they're huge. They're orchard, they're vineyard size. They're
really
gigantic. And they were so plentiful that you'd smell them on the side of the road rotting because there's just so many of them.
Well, no kidding.
Fermenting, rather. Not rotting by that point.
Yeah.
And I thought it was just that part of Connecticut. I went to a completely different side of Connecticut, and I saw them again. Yeah. What the hell's going on?
One time in New York, I found them. They must have been just perfect, and, you know, they were growing up along a fence, and you know, I started picking them, and, I mean, they were super sweet, and usually they're kind of woody and they're dry, and it must have been a perfect year, and,
yeah.
and they have to get frosted a couple of times. I think it was probably, you know, the end of September, the beginning of October that, you know, I saw all these purple grapes, and they were they were luscious looking, and I, you know, I filled a I had some kind of container in the car, and I filled it up and or my truck, and I brought them home, and you know, I ate till I was full, and then I brought some home. But I said, oh, I'm going to go back there next year. I went back there the next couple of years, and they were hard and rocky and green, and they just never matured like that again, which it must, your weather's got to be pretty perfect. Yeah,
there's one place in Kerhonkson, it might be the variety, too, just a different strain, you know?
Yeah.
There's one place in Kerhonkson on the side of the road. I don't know why they're big there too every year, but who the hell knows? So what's next?
White oak gets they live for a long, long time.
Oh yeah,
I mean 100 years to 500 years, so depending on the conditions. Anyway, so that's our white oak. The next one is Delaware.
Delaware,
and that's American holly.
That's surprising. There's something we don't know much about up here in New York. Some people have them planted, but they're not too common.
Yeah, they're. They're kind of a waxy, and you know, there's no lumber produced from them, but you know, they're a very beautiful tree. And actually, in 1939, Delaware made them their state tree, but they're shade and sun tolerant. And you know, the berries are poison to humans, but you know, birds and mammals eat them without any problem. And they're mostly, you know, streets and parks and hedges. And the symbol of them is fertility and eternal life. And they're thought to have magical powers.
Magical powers, Gary?
Magical powers.
Like what kind of powers are we talking about here?
Fertility.
Yep, there's one.
And,
like in what, the leaves? Or?
Not
actually,
the berries, I guess.
The bark?
The leaves and the plant, the berries, yeah.
All right.
And, well, the flowers are they're visited by bees and butterflies a lot. And they live up to 100 years or more. And small cows and deer, they eat the plant sometimes. But, you know, they got to be pretty hungry. They're not really that tasty.
I know there's one growing in Sampsonville, Ulster County, at 1,300 feet. on the side of a mountain in front of an old farmhouse. And there's three of them. There's the one someone planted, and it almost looks like the other two right next to it could be offspring. I don't know. But
you have to have a male and a female in order for them to produce berries and flowers.
Well, they look healthy, and at first I didn't know what it was, and I was like, it has to be a holly, because I go up there in the winter, and it's that green waxy leaves. Yeah. And I was like, that is a holly. And you see all the red berries eventually, and that was it. But
Yeah, many people know them as shrubs, but they can get pretty big. But they're not going to produce berries unless there's a male and female around.
Oh,
yeah.
Gary.
Yeah.
I heard you, remember last show, when we did USA Trees, we did Missouri, right? And Missouri, you and I were both befuddled that it was not the black walnut. What was it? Pine or something?
Dogwood.
Give me a break. So, and another state has flowering dogwood, too. I forget. It might be New Jersey. I forget. But that, why isn't it black walnut? It's like the heart of the range. When you think of Missouri, didn't you call them?
Yeah. There's not one state in the union. And,
listen to this.
So I called the governor's office.
Yeah.
And a guy answered. I was expecting to leave a message. Oh, this guy was very...
Did you just call a general number? Like, who'd you call?
The governor's office.
You called the governor's office?
Yes.
They would never pick up in New York State.
I'm sure. But, he answered the phone. And I said, I introduced myself, Gary Mead. I'm from New York State. And why is your state tree not a black walnut?
That's an unusual question.
And so he's on his computer, Googling, looking up all this stuff. He said, well, our state nut is a walnut. But I said, maybe you want to change it to black walnut because there isn't another state in the union that has black walnut as their state tree. And, a flowering dogwood, it's a pretty tree. I mean, black walnut. So he said, I think I'll talk to the secretary. I'll give the message to the secretary of the state. And I said, maybe you want to change that. Because in 1939, I think they made it their state tree. And I said, well, maybe, black walnut. But he said our state nut is a black walnut. And I said, well, we have a lot of New York state nuts, but I don't know what species they are. And I kind of left it at that. He was getting a little anxious toward the end, but he spent about 10 or 12 minutes on the phone with me and, talking to me, about state flowers and all that. I just said, maybe you just want to put a good word out there. You will be the only state in the union to have a black walnut for your state tree. So, he said, it's a really good idea.
Imagine if they did it. That'd be funny as hell.
What's that?
Put a plaque up to Gary.
That would be cool.
Some New Yorker called it. It's got a picture of Gary.
But anyhow, so moving on to Florida.
Florida. I don't even know what a sable palm is.
Sable palm.
That is.
Well, it's called a cabbage palmetto, most northern and abundant of the native tree, the palms. And it grows to 80 foot tall, and the leaf buds provide and leaves are used for the thatch roofs. Remember, on Gilligan's Island, all that, you see those buildings, they put up, little sticks on the side. Well, they use them for the roofs on the
and the
siding.
I'm looking at it right now. It's these are all over the place.
Yeah, I bet you they're the tree that you see in any movie that takes place in Miami or, it's going to be those big palm trees along the road.
Yeah, they're huge. They get really big.
Well, they're medicinal, too, because they're good for, dieting aid and, for if you have it lowers fever and treats headaches. Prefers full sun and lives 100 plus years. It'll get to 80 feet tall.
Although I would argue it's not a true tree, but that's being a little dorky. It's a monocot, right? Yeah. Help me up, Zane. It's not a tree.
It's more
related to what, the grasses than a tree, a palm tree?
So, if you know, it doesn't produce wood. It doesn't have that secondary growth.
I always label it as a weed.
Gary, you should call Florida's governor's office and say, listen, it's not a tree. You guys should change it. That's all I got.
Well, they have different oaks down there.
Yeah.
Because the first time I saw an oak like that, what the heck kind of oak are they? They look like...
Oh, the live oaks? The one with the Spanish moss?
Right. No, not the live oak. They have... it looks like pine needles. And they don't have leaves, but they call them leaves, but they look like needles.
Maybe like a water oak or something?
Well, there's one of the states that have them. I forget which one now, but you know, as I was going through them, one of the states do have that tree, but we'll get to that. But, it's happened back when Florida was first inhabited. They brought these seedlings or seeds and started planting them there. And because of the medicinal purposes and the full sun and all that, and they grow 80 to 100 feet tall, and they love growing in Florida. So I guess that's probably why they made them their state tree.
Yeah, no, I understand. I'm just being snarky.
I know for arborists down there, those fronds that they grow and then they kind of die back and they just hang on the bottom of the tree, and those have to be removed periodically because if they build up for a time and they break off on the tree, they can be really dangerous around pedestrians. Yeah. So.
Guys get hurt or killed taking those off.
Yeah.
They somehow can come down on you and smother you somehow.
Yeah.
I read about it in the arborist news.
It's like a big pile of leaves in a tree. Like, if you don't take it out properly, it can suffocate
that's,
you.
I guess that's the wind in Florida. You know, they have a lot of high wind there. That probably keeps them cleaned out. But if you have a place where it's protected from the wind pretty much, it probably does build up. And once it gives away, it's like a roof of a house caving in.
Plus fires, man, I would think, too. That's easy tinder. I mean, when we were in Busch Gardens in Tampa Bay last year, they had to stop the train. This is December, because it was like little fire right on the side of the railroad.
Huh.
You know, if they'd take you around the park. Because it's like, but there's like tinder everywhere, you know?
Yeah, well, it's just hot
there all the time.
Yeah. Everything gets crispy.
So now we're on to Georgia. Here it is, the evergreen oak. It lives over 400 years.
I thought it was a southern live oak for Georgia.
Well, it is. It's called the evergreen oak.
Huh.
And that's the one the Spanish moss grows on.
Yeah, this is a beautiful tree.
Yeah, and it gets to be very old. I'm on this site on my computer that it's all about, old trees. And, I've been taking pictures with my cell phone of these posts that I get. I've become, I guess, a member. I mean, it don't cost anything. You just log in and whatever. And as soon as you hit the site like 50 times, you're an automatic member. But some of the trees in the U.S. All around these states, these are just people that have them grown by their house, the sycamores, and there's oak. There's some oaks that are like 2,000 or 250 to 500 years old, and they're healthy. And the same with the sycamores, but it's a good site. I think I might do a show on that, maybe when we get done with these. And, talk about that a little bit because, if a tree's growing in the right place.
Get done with these, Gary. There's 50 states.
I know. We're moving along. We're in Georgia already.
We're at the G's already.
I don't know. I mean, did we go by? Yeah, I guess we went by alphabet. I'm not sure, so sure.
But, the southern live oak, they get about, they live a long time and they get, they're just the crown of these trees are 150 feet across, and they get about 80 to 90 feet tall. But, I mean, that's a and they have them along different roadways where they kind of meet in the middle, and it's like driving through a tunnel, especially with the moss that is hanging off them. It's very beautiful. But we do live in a very wonderful, I mean, the earth is a wonderful, wonderful place. I just, the beauty of it kind of gets taken away with all the crap that goes on, but it's, you still got to notice it and get out there and you know, the stuff that's more important to me than who's going to be the next,
Gary, do you think there was ever a time where people were like, you know what, this is the best time ever?
Every day of my life.
Well, then hold on to that.
I do.
Yeah. I don't know. Every time I turn on the media or something, everyone's like, well, this one, you know, this is the worst and blah, blah, blah. I don't know.
No, we have so many. I mean, you just focus on the wonderful stuff, and it's awesome. So we're up to Hawaii.
Yeah.
And that's a candle nut tree.
No idea what that is.
And it's a, well,
I'm looking at it. It has a maple-like leaf.
Well, they call it the candle nut because back in before there was electricity, they took and extracted the oil from the nut to make candles. And the tree actually means peace, security, and enlightenment. And it grows up to 75 feet tall. The leaves and bark are used to treat skin conditions, inflammation, and infections. Nuts are a source of natural oils and skin and hair products. I mean, actually, they harvest the nuts, and they put the oils in skin and care products. Edible only in small quantities, so that's a thumbs up, don't eat it. So, there's a growing agent in the nuts that will produce thick hair. So balding people are rubbing it on their bald heads. And but I didn't research into that very deep. But it produces follicles that will grow hair. And more valuable for nuts than lumber. It's a very soft and weak wood fiber. It was became the state tree in 1959, and it's from subtropical and tropical Asia and Australian Queensland. And it's it was brought to Hawaii over 1,000 years ago by Polynesian voyagers. And now we're on the...
So it's not native to Hawaii?
No.
Oh.
It's not...
Interesting.
The native thing's overblown, Zane.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
in my humble opinion.
If something's been there for 1,000 years, I would imagine it's probably quite native by then.
At what point, you know? It's but, like...
Yeah.
And now we're to Idaho. And that's a western white pine. And
get rid of it. There's nothing. The candle nut tree is not native. Gotta get rid of it.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess I got another phone call to make. A call.
What are these trees look like?
Hawaii.
Give it back to Polynesia.
Yeah.
It's got a maple leaf look-alike leaf on it.
The candle nut?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The bark.
I mean, I'm looking at the computer, and yeah, it was.
Well, the nut was, it looks like something we used to get, and I'm not really sure... macadamia nuts that kind of look like them in the shell.
Yeah.
And, you know, because, you know, around the holidays, Christmas and Easter maybe, you know, we back in the day we used to get these bags of mixed nuts and Mom would put them in a big bowl in the middle of the table with a nutcracker. And when I first saw the nut, when I was researching the candle nut, I thought that's what it It looks just like that one nut that we got in the thing, but then it said, you know, you can eat it in very small quantities. So, you know, that's when somebody tells you that, you really don't need to eat it. And
right.
You're like, hey, slow
I mean,
down.
if you're out in the woods and you're surviving and you know, you got to eat a couple, go ahead. But
you're still doing all right, buddy.
You want some more?
Some more? Come on, give him some more. See how he does.
You want a little more?
Yeah. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest. Tonight's topic is state trees of the USA. And I think we're up to Idaho is next. We'll take a break.
Jangles and he danced for you. In worn out shoes, silver hair, ragged shirt, baggy pants. He would do the old soft shoe. He would jump so high, jump so high. And then he'd lightly touch down. Told me of the times he worked with minstrel shows, traveling throughout the South. Spoke with tears of 15 years how his dog and he, they would travel about. He said, I dance now at every chance and I'll get drunk. All my drinks and chips, most of the time I spend behind these county bars. You see, son, I drinks a bit. Then he shook his head. Someone say, please, please. That's Mr. Bojangles. Call him Mr. Bojangles. Mr. Bojangles, come back and dance. Dance, dance, please dance. Mr. Bojangles, dance. Come back and dance again. Please, Bojangles.
Tuning in. You listen to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Brian and Zane tonight. And tonight's topic is State Trees of the USA, Part 2 with Gary Mead. We're up to Idaho, I guess, talking about the western white pine. This guy, I guess, can grow up to 165 feet, Gary.
Yeah, and that's up to 4 foot in diameter.
There, you get a longer climbing line. I only got a 150-foot climbing line, which only means I can only go 75 feet.
Yeah, and then you have to top it.
Top it?
Sorry. There's a lot of lumber in one of those trees, but, you know, it's it's good for a lot of different, you know, I mean, it's good for framing, it's good for flooring, and, you know, anything that you use white pine for around here, basically. But it's harder than our white pines that we have here. The white, and it has a reddish heart, the same as our white pines here do as well, but it's got a little more, I guess because of where it grows and the weather conditions. The biggest tree in New York State is a white pine. I mean, you look out at the mountains, it's the tallest tree, and I don't know if it's the biggest, but when you look at our mountains, and especially in the wintertime, all the tops of the mountain, you see, green sticking up all winter, and you know the spruces and the hemlocks, you know, grow taller than the hardwoods.
I stand corrected, Gary. Medford, Oregon has a western white pine that grew to 239 feet.
One tree or all of them?
One tree.
that's a big tree.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Imagine fighting your way to the top of that thing.
Nah, you'd be gassed. Take your time.
I was looking online, and, you know, with the bark and the needles, it looks a lot like the eastern white pine, but the cones probably is what would give it away. And it, the cones
they're
look
gigantic.
Like, well, they're just a beefier eastern white pine cone.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, they're good for, you know, when they fall, this, you know, different mammals and birds are, you know, I mean, the whole cycle of the whole thing is amazing, that, you know, the trees are basically provide food and medical assistance and all that stuff. I mean, there's so many good things about trees and you know, we really don't think about, as, you know, when people think about a tree, they, you know, that's beautiful, let's put it on the lawn, or let's in the mountains. And but, you know, the medicinal uses and the uses for lumber and you know, the importance of it feeding the local wildlife and landscape and birds, it's pretty amazing. And you know what I always love the most about trees is, you know, the wild ones. Nobody plants them. You don't have to spray them. You don't have to fertilize them. They just grow, and it's one of the most, you know. And that's the same with a lot of wild plants, because, you know, I spend a lot of time growing a garden and producing, and, you know, I don't use pesticides or anything. And if the bugs get ahead of me, you know, I lose the crop. But you know, out in the wild, that's why I started harvesting wild plants, because I don't have to plant them. I don't have to weed around them. I don't have to, you know, take care of them and water them. And, you know, I just go when they're ripe. And everything that grows wild usually has a 2 to 4 week window. And that's when you harvest and take it. And it's but, you know, the pine cones and what, that lasts all winter. On it, you know, for animals to feed through the winter. And, you know, a lot of people wonder, you know, they see apples on trees most of the winter. Well, that's nature's way of providing food for animals all in the winter if we get deep snow. You know, we get a, you know, 3-4 foot snowfall, and, you know, the deer, you know, looking for something to eat, and we get a real windy day, and it blows some of those apples off or pine cones shake loose. And, you know, when you're hungry, you eat anything that's kind of nourishing. And but nature's pretty cool, you know. You pay attention to it, because it's our lifeline. And, you know, when things aren't so cushy, I'm thinking that you're going to have to learn how to take better care of our needs, because, I mean, things just, in my world, can't go on the way they are. But anyway.
Hey, Gary, so this tree lives, you're asking how long it lives for. 350 years, typically up to 500. Not as old as I would have thought.
Right.
But unfortunately, like Idaho, it's not as common as it used to be because of white blister rust, which I guess they've worked on since then, but yeah, it wiped out quite a bit of them.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that comes in from mostly other countries that are hurting our tree population here, but, you know, it's, you know, we talked about this with the white ash and the chestnuts and, you know, when and the elms, and, you know, it's a shame to lose them, and, you know, it's a really hurtful thing, but
so, yeah, the primary,
something else comes along and replaces them, and, you know, that's just nature's way of, you know, keep to providing.
The blister rust was the primary thing that wiped them out, but also mountain pine beetle, fire suppression, so this must be a fire-dependent
tree
and harvesting.
And, you know, their bark's up to 10 inches thick, so, you know, that's why it's, you know, any tree that's fire-resistant basically has really thick bark and, you know, can withstand the fire and survive it. And that, and the, you know, when they grow in the deep forest, they don't have lower limbs, which, you know, the bole of the tree is a lot higher up, so the fire really doesn't get to the needles. So that's a big asset to, you know, fire retardant trees too.
Next, I guess.
We're on to
yellow poplar, tulip poplar, right?
Indiana. Yep.
Did we skip Illinois?
Did we skip Illinois? We did skip Illinois.
Illinois is white oak again. We already talked about that.
Well, yeah.
And I mean, I think there's six or seven different states that have oak for their state tree, but Connecticut
should duke it out.
Yeah, you know, there's a white oak. But Indiana, the tulip, and I like tulip. Tulip don't grow on this side of the mountain,
it's
but
a
over
great tree.
Over by Ryan, and you know, it likes to grow along waterways.
You can plant it here.
Well, you can.
It will grow fine.
It will grow, but it doesn't. It not like over on your side. Anything over High Mountain down through Kingston. And,
I don't know. There's nice ones around. You know,
but that have been planted.
Yes, planted.
Right, but down by you, there's very few that were planted. They just grow along the rivers and stuff. They you know, they reproduce, and I've seen some giant ones, you know, up to 4 and 5 foot in diameter, and most of them, you know, they're pretty fast growing. But what I'm most fascinated with is not so much the lumber as the bark.
Yeah.
The Indians use it in their longhouses, and, you know, they put the roofs and the sides on. It lasts 60 to 80 years outdoors untreated, the bark. But the wood wouldn't last 5 years outdoors. And, you know, it's an interior wood. It's beautiful. It's, I mean, the heart of it's green. It's so beautiful. I have a piece in my gallery that is, I keep out of the light, it's in the dark, and I get the same response every time somebody goes through the gallery. Oh my God, that's so beautiful, that wood, but I tell them, I said, you know, if you take this and you make something out of it, you put it in your house, and, you know, because I don't have any windows in that one section of the gallery, so as long as you keep it in, you know, it can, natural light won't discolor it or, you know, turn it brown. But, you know, I saw it, a bunch of it had, you know, it was purple and it was green and it was orange and it had all these beautiful colors. And so I made a ceiling out of it. And, you know, a year later, it all just turned amber brown. And, you know, that's how I learned that, you know, it oxidizes and that color will not stay unless you keep it, you know, in a dark place where the sun, no light, any kind of sunlight will darken it and change it back to an amber color. The purples and browns and everything turns kind of brown.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm siding my new shop and the gables to my shop I'm siding with tulip bark. And, you know, when I build my house in a couple of years, I'll be siding the whole house with that. But, you know, the rectangle part of the house will be done tulip poplar, and then I'm going to be using hemlock for the gables. And because hemlock will last 30 to 40 years outdoors untreated. But, you know, of course, I'm going to put a little, you know, preservative on it, and it'll outlast vinyl. It's a pretty amazing tree, but they get huge.
Yeah.
And, you know, the bark peeling months are, I guess, probably next month. If you want to, April, May, and April.
Memorial
May.
Day or so is what I find.
Right up
trees.
Until about, you know, the end of, the beginning of August, middle of August would be about the last part of that, because then it starts sticking.
To me, that tree is beautiful for three main reasons. It's one of the straightest growing hardwood trees. It just wants to grow straight usually.
And
the second thing is the leaves are a dark green pigment that's just very beautiful, shaped like a tulip. That's why it's also called tulip. And the flowers.
The flowers are
so underrated, because usually the tree's so tall you don't see them.
You know, right. Yeah.
But if you do catch a glimpse of them, they're absolutely beautiful. And my youngest daughter is named Magnolia, and she's not named after the magnolia tree. She's named after the magnolia family of tulip poplar. I just didn't want to call her tulip. You know? But it's really after the yellow poplar tree, which I like a lot.
Yeah.
So one was in my fenced-in area where the deer can't get to. There was a little seedling growing amongst a grapevine, and it was a yellow poplar. So I took it out last fall and replanted it next to the chicken coop, so we'll see how it does. But
Well, they like a lot of water, and, you know, I think that's why they grow so tall and so fast, is because they just reach for the light.
And, yeah.
I mean, they're so straight, they're so nice to saw, and I mean, everything about them, and they're an easy wood to work, and they're very forgiving. It dries easy, it saws nice, and, you know, the smell when you're sawing it is, it's a sweet smell. You know, not all stuff smells sweet. And
oh, really? I didn't know that.
Different species. And
I don't know if I've ever cut one up, to be honest, so I wouldn't know that. It smells
sweet. Well, I bought a bunch of logs from Tri-State Hardwoods, and, you know, I bought a tractor-trail load, or two picker loads, and, you know, they all come in at 16 feet, and I think the smallest one was about 28 inches on the small end. But I had these gigantic logs that they dropped off, and, you know, I just bought them for the bark.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the lumber was, but I have so, and I'd saved a lot of the, you know, 24, 27 inch wide boards for my house in New Kingston, because all my interior walls, I make studless walls, I call them, and all you need is a 5 or 6 quarter, you know, piece of hardwood. You stand it up and you know, attach it to, you know, something up on the top, and put a cleat and attach it to the floor, and you don't need 2x4s for studs. And I come up with this idea years ago when I, probably 25 years ago, when I put an addition on my house, and I was building my closets. And this one carpenter said, "Oh my God, we need a bunch of 2x4s. And I said, "No, we don't." I said, "I have some beech that's, you know, 6 quarter beech. I planed it down to 1¼". And we stood them up and put it, you know, connect them to the ceiling and the floor. And but you don't, you save a lot of space, because that whole wall is 1 inch thick. Mm-hmm. If you use a 2x4 with your, and then you gotta, you know, put some kind of siding on it, and inside and out, and I mean, it's just a lot of, but, you know, with a 1 inch solid board, or, you know, 5/4, 6/4 board, it, you know, you have your whole wall there, and it's a space saver. And that's the main reason that I come up with that idea, because, you know, you get 4 or 5 inches more space in your closet, where you really don't need all that, you know, studding and whatever. But, and, you know, that one instant, the carpenter said, "Oh, we need a bunch of 2x4s. Boy, it closets gobble up a lot of 2x4s. And I said, well, I'm not using 2x4s. I come up with an idea last night, and, you know, I showed him what we were doing. He said, studless walls, that's amazing. So, anyhow.
Studless walls.
We are. I have a poem to read.
Sounds like a radio show topic.
I want to read something I just wrote.
We only got 2.5 minutes.
I know. I'll get through this. I'm rambling on. But this is called Sleeping with Sawdust. I wrote this 10/14 of last year at 9 a.m. Composing wood and chop all day into the night, into the next day. Tired eyes burning about 3 a.m. Barely remember driving home. Slip into bed cozy and warm. Part of a tree came to bed with me. Sleeping with sawdust is my reality. Waking after a few hours sleep, this very thought came to me. Thinking while changing bed sheets, working class heroes are vanishing away. Modern times burying them in graves. Hard working middle class, forgotten souls lost in days gone past. And I'm quite sure we will need them back. Foreign matter in our beds sometimes when coming home too tired to shower. Sawdust, dirt, grease, oil, paint, and grime find ways into our beds sometimes. Way of life towing the line, minds and bodies caring while fined. Working class heroes are sublime. Ignoring pain, standing firm in their boots while being torn from their roots. Overtaxed by heartless fools. Meanwhile, back at the workshop, eyes wide open with hearts of gold. Stamina and strength along for the ride. Egos replaced with perfection and pride. Waking mornings, they let go a laugh. Tough as nails, facing another day. Working class heroes have been slipping away. Sleeping with sawdust once in a while, always going the extra mile. Old and gray, hopping last train, leaving world a better place. Their ghosts now filling empty spaces. Hug a working class hero today, for tomorrow just may be too late. Peace, everybody, and thanks for listening.
All right, that's all the time we have. Next week we have the Aldo Leopold Foundation on, talking about conservation. That's all the time I have, and have a good night.
Good night, everyone.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year. His grizzled fingers, and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games in an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town.